Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic today on the show. Oh, it's a beautiful day. We got style icon, Detroit Pistons beat writer, just legend of the game, one of the best beat writers in all of the country. It's James Edwards from over at The Athletic. James, how you doing, man? Award-winning beat writer, man. Congratulations.
I appreciate it, man. Always glad to be on with you. Always good to talk with you. It's been good getting through the season. It's been a little more fun covering the team last month or so. But the NBA in general has been a lot of fun this season, despite the craziness of COVID and all that stuff. But it's been good. I've enjoyed it. Love following along with what you're doing. I'm very excited for this draft class in a weird way. and you're part to blame. So thank you for having me on.
That makes one of us, James, because I've been talking about this draft class for a long time, and it's getting tough yeah. to find new angles, even though we don't know who half of the first round picks are going to be this year.
Right. It's super interesting, and I think, me and you will eventually talk about it, as we do every year, many times, given who I cover, but yeah, no, it's an interesting class for many reasons.
Yeah, today I wanted to have James on to do the All-Star discussion. So we are going to talk about the All-Star starters that were named last night on TNT. We are going to talk about who our choices would be for the All-Star reserves. I don't know if James feels the same way I do, but the Eastern Conference was an absolute bloodbath. The Western Conference, I got down to like eight names for seven guys. Like, I felt pretty good about where I was at in the West. The East, I am going to hand ring myself into picks that I still don't necessarily have it completely locked down who my picks are going to be as we get ready to talk about the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, no, same here.
It's a mess.
Yeah, there's too many guys.
Okay. But first I want to start on some just random NBA trade news and notes that have come across in the last 48 hours since I last recorded. And just today, in the time over here in Australia where I was asleep, Adrian Wojnarowski from over at ESPN has reported that the Kings have bowed out of the Ben Simmons deal in negotiations in order to essentially explore other options in order to change their team. Because, look, James, I don't know how much you get a chance to watch the Kings, but I'm not sure there has been a team in need of a roster shakeup more in the last 4 years. It's crazy. This team desperately needs to do something just to change the vibes, change everything around the team. And if Daryl Morey is going to continue to hand wring and do this, I get it. If I'm the Kings, I think it makes sense for them to just kind of move on and hopefully be able to get back in once this trade deadline gets closer and closer, given the way that these negotiations often become public and the way that prices can tend to drop. And as we get to the deadline, things can change. But for now, the Kings are out of the Ben Simmons deal. What are your thoughts originally as we jump into this?
Like you said at the top of the segment, if any team needs a shocking or major roster shakeup, it is the Kings. I agree. So when all this talk was coming out of who was going to trade for Ben Simmons. Realistically, like, we see team names and reports, and those of us on the inside, like, know who's real and who's not. I thought the Kings obviously were real, and it is legitimate. And that was one of the teams I did like, because like you said, like, the Kings have been stale for many years, but it's been different iterations of stale with different players. In this group specifically, it needs to be they need to be shaken up, and I don't know how else you would get a major shakeup without going all in on a guy like Ben Simmons. I think that they have the pieces to do individual trades, or like maybe two or three trades. You could do, like, if you wanted to trade De'Aaron Fox and Rashawn Holmes to get something nice, you might be able to. If you wanted to trade Buddy separately, Harrison, so, like, you could probably get some nice stuff, but is it enough stuff that you're on square two instead of square one? Like, I think Ben Simmons, in kind of resetting, and maybe, of course, maybe being bad this year, but resetting and getting a cornerstone like that was intriguing to me. But I also understand the Kings' point. Like, you don't want to get pulled a fast one on you. And based on what we've heard about what Morey wants for Ben Simmons, I don't know if I personally would give up all of that. And I'd rather wait it out and maybe see if you can get something less, or get him for less.
The interesting part about all of this for the Kings is Tyrese Haliburton has kind of passed De'Aaron Fox in my mind. De'Aaron Fox has not had his best year. I think it's reasonable to assume that he will play better at some point. Tyrese Haliburton over the last, like, 2 months has been amazing. He's averaging, yeah, like 17 points, 9 assists, like a couple of steals a game. He rebounds reasonably well. He's starting to knock down pull-up jumpers. To me, he's the guy that you build around. I'm doing everything I can to make him the best player he can be.
Yep.
Trading for Ben Simmons is an interesting player for Tyrese Haliburton, given that Tyrese is a bigger point guard. He can handle the ball, but I also think I want, like, a secondary ball handler next to him in some respect, because he's not, like, the most dynamic player in the NBA with the ball in his hands. He's an incredible decision maker. He's an incredible passer, incredible feel for the game. He's become a really high-level pull-up shooter. Just in terms of his shit off the bounce, I don't think he's, like, the most amazing guy that you'll find in the league.
Nope.
Ben Simmons, I think, could help that.
Yeah.
The thing is that you can't have Ben Simmons and De'Aaron Fox, I don't think. I think that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that's gross. That's gross to me. And if I were the Kings, like you said, De'Aaron just has not been good this year. And I think that could be part of the situation going on in Sacramento. Maybe it is uninspiring and whatever, X, Y, and Z. But yeah, just a Simmons and De'Aaron Fox, I just don't know where that gets you. And I agree that Haliburton, that's kind of why I left him off when I said the guys that could do individual piece for. I think that's the guy you build around now, because one, like you said, he's just made major improvements. I think he's exceeded. We all liked him coming in the draft, but I kind of just thought he would be what he showed as a rookie. I was like, I could see him just doing that for 10 years and be a really good player, but he's taken it to another level. And I think he's one of those, well, he is one of those guys where can play on the ball, off the ball, and obviously much better than Fox. And you can just build around that much easier. It's similar, obviously, situation in Detroit with Cade. Like, when you get a guy like that, the flexibility in terms of roster building just is enormous. So, Haliburton, I agree, is the one untouchable if I were the Kings, of course, unless something crazy comes up. But and especially in a Ben Simmons trade, I wouldn't give up Haliburton. That's the guy I would, pushing forward, that's the guy I would want to keep around if I can.
And if I was Daryl Morey, I don't know how interested I would be in De'Aaron Fox as a fit with Joel Embiid. Yeah. Because so much of what De'Aaron Fox does is based off speed, transition. De'Aaron plays hard defensively. He's not an awesome defender at this point. I would need a good amount more, I guess, in addition to De'Aaron Fox, to move Ben Simmons for him. And I don't know if the Kings will want to do that. Finding something that makes sense for Sacramento for Ben Simmons has always been a little bit tricky for me. You can find iterations that make a lot of sense for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Haliburton, Hield, Harrison Barnes, all those guys can really help. But if you're moving Halliburton and you're pairing Ben Simmons with De'Aaron Fox, it doesn't make a ton of sense. If you're pairing De'Aaron Fox with Joel Embiid, it doesn't make a crazy amount of sense to me. Yep. So I understand the idea of just wanting to get the best talent that you can. And Monty McNair comes from the Daryl Morey, Houston Rockets tree. I understand the idea that he might want to go down that road of just getting the guys in that you want, and then you can build the roster around them in the way that you see fit. Whenever you have core pieces, I think, that don't fit quite as well together, I think that that idea becomes a bit more challenging. I understand the Kings bowing out, and I'll be interested to see what the Kings do, because, good Lord, again, please, Sacramento, do, make a trade.
Do like, something.
Dude, you're driving Alvin Gentry to drink. Like, yeah. Please. Please,
he's too nice of a guy. I don't like seeing Gentry stressed out. He's like the nicest guy in the league.
Seriously, the first time I ever met Alvin Gentry was probably 3 years ago at the NBA draft combine. And, you know, I was just ran into him in the, like, one of the hotel lobbies where the NBA teams are staying and everything. And you just kind of run into people down there, and he knew exactly who I was. Couldn't have been the nice, like, couldn't That's have been cool. a nicer person in the world. Just like such a good dude. And you're driving that man to drink. Like, please, please do something for the love of God.
Stop it. God damn it, Sacramento.
Stop it. Stop making such a nice man struggle through what you're putting him through. Okay.
So we mentioned off the pod, we're going to maybe mention Jeremy, and obviously Sacramento is a place that they could shift their attention to.
Yeah.
Jeremy Grant. If you're Detroit, what deal would you like on from Sacramento, if there is one?
If you could get – so I'm in – part of me is like – so my answer, I think, is I don't love it.
Yeah.
Given the way that this draft sets up at the top, it's hard for me to find a move. Like, I think there's a real nugget of an idea behind Rashawn Holmes and Jeremy Grant.
Uh-huh.
The problem is the Kings don't have any bigs behind Rashawn Holmes, so they're going to have to bring a big man back.
Right.
I don't think I'd want to move Isaiah Stewart and Jeremy Grant to get Rashawn Holmes. Like, yeah. I don't think I would want Buddy Hield, really, if I was Detroit.
Right.
Even though, like, his shooting would fit next to Cade Cunningham, it actually would really help them, I guess. Maybe that's not terrible.
Help them, but it's like, do they want to be helped right now?
Yeah, and his deal's pretty big. Like, it's 2 years for $38 million, and Buddy's in the midst of the worst season of his career in Sacramento so far. I don't know if I love that. I mean, like, the idea of Rashawn Holmes and having, like, an incredible rim runner and roll man and, like, short roll man for Cade Cunningham is really, really interesting to me. And there's, like, a nugget of an idea there in terms of Jeremy Grant for Rashawn Holmes. I just don't know that I can come up with, like, the structure of it that makes sense, I guess.
No, I agree. That's kind of where I was at. Obviously, Halliburton is a no. De'Aaron just doesn't fit, and that's probably too much for Jeremy. And, you look at Rashawn, fits a need. The Pistons, is Isaiah Stewart still improving? They could use a rim-running, athletic big man. That's one thing that's kind of lacking on the roster. So, yeah, I feel like if there is something to be there, which – like you, I don't think there will be. I think Holmes will be involved. Maybe like a future. I could see them going for Holmes or like a future. I don't know. It's a weird fit. I don't see anything materializing with Sacramento.
Sneaky.
Not for Grant, at least.
The problem is, I think that I personally would rather have Rashawn Holmes than Jeremy Grant.
Fair.
If I was Detroit.
Yep.
I would bet you that both teams feel the opposite way in regard to that. Which would mean like a difficult negotiation, I would
think. For sure.
The other funny trade report that came out was from Mark Stein, I believe. He said that the Pacers are looking for 2 first-round picks from Caris LeVert. So if that's the case, Caris LeVert's not getting traded.
I'm looking for 7 figures from The Athletic. It's not happening. You can ask.
Like, I guess you can ask, but like, what are – I mean, look, Karras is a good player. Like, I really actually am higher on Karras than I think most people are.
I like Karras a lot.
Yeah, really good pick and roll creator, really good isolation creator that I think actually scales up in the playoffs a little bit, despite the shooting, because you really have to account for him at all times on the court. His playoff record with the Nets was really strong, actually. You go back and you look at like the series he played there, it was pretty good. The problem is that he's 2 years left at $17 million, and I don't think that contract is terrible.
Right.
But who's your market for Karis LeVert? The Lakers, the more I think about it, they probably can't do it because he's not a good enough shooter. The Cavs, I think the Cavs are a reasonable one, but the Cavs aren't giving up two future firsts because their window is extended, right? Yep. You might be able to get Colin Sexton. Like, I think that that's interesting. But for LeVert, I don't think you're getting two first-round picks in Cleveland. I don't think that there's salary matching that can happen in Milwaukee or in Brooklyn. I mean, like, it's funny.
I would like Memphis.
Memphis makes sense, but I don't know that he fits what Memphis does. Like, I've been trying to find a way to get, like, a Memphis upgrade.
Yeah.
You could maybe make a case for that. Yeah.
That's a fair point.
But the name that I keep coming up with for Memphis is Eric Gordon. I like the idea of getting another good defender in there who's tough, who's physical, big body, can also really knock down shots, which is something that's important to them. They can do something like one of those three first round picks they have this year, Kyle Anderson and the Jarrett Culver contract, right? And get Eric Gordon. I think that'd actually be a pretty good deal for everyone involved. Karis LeVert for two first-round picks ain't going to happen, Indiana. No.
if Indy comes down on that price, what do you think about something centered around – and I'm just – this kind of just came off as we were talking about it. I hadn't really thought about it all the way through yet. But a Kevin Huerter-LeVert swap in some way. Are you a fan or no?
It'd be too tricky because Huerter has the has the poison pill right now because he's signed an extension in October. The only move that you can really involve Huerter in, if you are Atlanta, is the Ben Simmons deal if you attach Tobias Harris to Ben Simmons. Okay. Because the numbers get so big at that point in terms of the salary that you're moving. Like, you're moving, like, literally $65, $70 million each way.
Right, right.
That the poison pill in terms of, like, the 125% rule with trades becomes much more manageable at that point.
Okay. Okay.
But in like a normal trade, it's going to be too tough to move Huerter because he counts for like $4 million for the team that's trading him. And then like, I think it's like $16 million or something for the team that is acquiring him. It's complicated.
I forgot about the poison pill that he had. So that's off the table. All right. Well, I was spitballing. I like Eric Gordon in Memphis though.
Yeah.
I've been here in Cleveland, but I like Memphis more.
I like Eric Gordon in Cleveland, too. The problem is, again, if you're Cleveland, I would be 10% worried. I wouldn't be, like, fully worried. I'd be, like, a little bit worried. I would really need to protect that pick if I was sending it to Houston. Because if I was Houston, what I'd be asking for Eric Gordon, honestly, is, like, a future first-round pick. I would be looking for a 2023 pick as opposed to a 2022 pick because I think this draft is kind of a mess right now.
Yeah.
And if you're Cleveland and you're moving a future pick, I would be just a little bit worried that they're playing above their weight just a little bit right now.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they revert, like we've seen Atlanta revert this year, we've seen the Suns in the past, like the team that always stands out in my mind with this is like the Jeff Hornacek Suns that won like 49 games and missed the playoffs. And
or the 10th seed or something like that, right?
They were, the 10th seed. And then they reverted back to like a 30-win team after that. Yeah. I think Cleveland's on the rise. I think that Evan Mobley's awesome and it's probably going to stop them from having that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really want to protect any future pick that I send out on Cleveland, I would say. But I don't mind the Eric Gordon fit there. I think that's a reasonable one. Okay, we've gone for 18 minutes on trades. Let's let's go and move into the All-Stars because we wanted to do that. All-Star starters were named last night. In the West, we've got Stephen Curry, Ja Morant, Nikola Jokic, LeBron James, and Andrew Wiggins. In the East, we've got DeMar DeRozan and Trae Young. We've got Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kevin Durant, and Joel Embiid. James voted on All-Star starters as part of the media. How similar did that look to yours?
Everybody in the West, except Wiggins, obviously. I had Gobert. And then in the East, which was obviously tough, I had Fred VanVleet over Trey. I know Trey is obviously having a phenomenal offensive season. The All-Star game, people don't care about two-way guards, those little bulldogs like Fred VanVleet, so I get that. But and while the Hawks have played better as of late, I just didn't really want to reward Trey, who doesn't even try defensively. So that's like the basketball nerd in me coming out. Like, I know people don't give a damn for the All-Star game, but like, Fred has been so good offensively, so good defensively. Pascal Siakam was missing for like a good part of the season. He's kind of just come around as of late. That Raptors team isn't as good as as the record is to me. I like them, but I feel like they're still like a guy away. So for them to be in the position they're in, I just really wanted to reward Fred. And then obviously Wiggins is, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but got the nation behind him, the nation of Canada, and everybody hates Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, and apparently some K-pop stars.
Shout out to Anthony Slater with the K-pop story. And everybody hates Rudy Gobert, so he was the one to benefit from that.
Yeah, I mean, the players had Rudy Gobert relatively low as well.
Yep.
So, look, let's. I think that the West was fine. Like, I probably would have gone John Morant over Devin Booker. Devin Booker would have been number three for me. In terms of the front court, in the West is weird this year, just because there's been so many injuries. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Draymond Green missed some time.
Yeah. Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis as well. I personally would have picked Draymond Green, but that's not a surprise to listeners of the show.
I thought about it.
Draymond Green is, like, you know, the best. I love Draymond Green unconditionally.
Same.
In the East, I probably would have gone Trey and DeMar, and I would have gone with all three of those guys. So, like, I don't really have a lot of complaints in terms of the All-Star starters. I also don't really care that Andrew Wiggins is an All-Star. I don't
like, either.
Look, Andrew Wiggins has had a very strange career. And going back to being called Maple Jordan, he was like the number one recruit in the country. He was like the next LeBron, everything like that. And it seems like, just given his personality, he's like a pretty quiet guy, pretty reserved. That's not something he asked for, right? So for him to go from like essentially like pariah in Minnesota, where everyone hated his contract, seemed like people were mostly done with him, to reframe the narrative of his career in Golden State and become a guy that I think people are like good with watching, and he's become a successful part of a really good team. I like it. Like, I like the story.
Same.
I'm not going to make a case that he should be an All-Star. I'm not going to like make a case based off of basketball, right?
Right.
But it's an All-Star game, and it's Andrew Wiggins, and I'm just not going to get too up in arms about the whole thing, I guess. Like, congrats to, I would rather be congratulatory toward Andrew Wiggins than like parse and hem and haw about you know, the whole experience of voting.
I agree. Like you said, it's the All-Star game. Who really cares? It's the fans. It's a game for the fans, and the fans spoke. Whether or not that's due to it, him being from a country that obviously wanted to get him in, great. That's fine. That's what happened. He's been really good this year. First, I think that's like buried the lead. Yeah. Like, he's been really good this year, as you mentioned.
He's probably been a top 25 player in the West, something like that.
For sure. Like, I don't think if he would have made the All-Star game just in general, not even a starter, like, I wouldn't have batted an eye, because he's been fine. He's, like you said, he's been one of the best 25 guys in the West. And like, yeah, I don't know. I just, I don't, to me, like, does he deserve to start based on performance? No, but like, does he deserve to be an all-star? Yeah, you can make a case that he's an all-star. Like, I wouldn't, if somebody really wanted to fight for it, I wouldn't bat an eye. Like, he's been good this year.
Yeah, he's a really good defender. I mean, you watch him last night. I mean, like, yeah, he was defending his balls off, and like, he can actually shoot now. Like, he's a really useful player. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, you know, I'm not gonna make case he's like a, you know, phenomenal player who's, you know, among, you know, one of the five best players in the Western Conference, but I'm just not gonna, you know, not gonna complain that he's in the All-Star game and we need a referendum on how we you know, pick the All-Star starters. Like, yeah. I don't know. Just not gonna dive into that world here. I understand if people want to do it, but I'm not gonna do it.
It's a half-ass process for a half-ass game. It's all entertainment, yeah.
Right. Like, if you really wanted to do it, I mean, I'm sure you saw some player votes. Like, we had Nemeas Keita, we had Kelvin Johnson Joseph. Had like 11 votes. Corey Joseph had votes. Like, you know, Jonathan Kuminga got a vote. Like, it's just as much as it's fans that picked Andrew Wiggins. The players also played a significant role in this as well. You know, the media played a significant role in this. Like, it's, I don't have a problem with involving everyone in the process. Do I wish that players would take it more seriously and, like, you know, people like Nemi Keita wouldn't get a vote? Yeah, right. I do. And like, honestly, there were probably like 100 votes that were like pretty indefensible for what the purpose of this was, but like, whatever. It's an all-star game. Like, let's just and then not go crazy.
That's like content in itself. Like, people love seeing who the random player is that guy. I don't know. It's just all this whole all-star experience is content driven. And as long as it's not goofy, come all NBA time, I'm fine with it.
Right. So Andrew Wiggins, just for reference here, he's averaging 18 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists per game. He's shooting 48% from the field, 41% from three. He's played really, really high level defense. I wouldn't quite say he's like an all defense team guy, but I would say that, you know, he has been a very positive defender on what has been the best defensive team in the NBA this season. You know, good player. I'm not gonna like sit here and parse with it. Okay, let's take a quick commercial break, and we will get into our All-Star reserve, starting with the Eastern Conference. Which, what a bloodbath! What an absolute bloodbath! Okay, we're back, and we are going to dive into our picks for Eastern Conference reserves for the All-Star game. I have 8 names here because, per Chris Haynes last night, it seems unlikely that Kevin Durant is going to play in the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. He's currently dealing with an injury right now, and we'll see how it goes, obviously. Like, maybe he'll play, maybe he won't. So I've got a list of 8 names here. 2 guards, 3 front court guys, and 3 wild cards. In the West, I have 2 backcourt, 3 front court, 2 wild cards, because currently nobody's injured and doesn't look like anyone is going to miss time, knock on wood, that, you know, nobody's going to miss time. So, okay, I want to start by, in the East, by going through guys that I just, like, no question put on the team. I had no real questions about Zach LaVine. Nope. Zach LaVine is averaging 25 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He's shooting 49, 40, 87 from the field. He's been just a very small step below DeMar DeRozan, who is a rightful all-star starter. The Bulls have been one of the best stories of the NBA season so far. They've been one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference so far. I think Zach LaVine is a no-doubter, no-brainer all-star. Any thoughts there?
I'm with you. If I didn't vote FVV, LaVine would have been my number two. So I think he should be a starter. He's starter worthy more than Trey in my eyes. But I digress. So I'm with you on that.
Okay. Next up, I have Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler is averaging 21, 6, and 6. He is the best player on the best team in the East. He missed about 15 games early in the season. And I think that that is a big part of the reason why he was unable to even enter the starter conversation, really. But I think he is, given his defensive ability, given his shot making, given how he's just kind of the identity of the best team in the East, yeah. And also that he's been able to carry Miami on this run here lately, while Bam Adebayo has missed some time throughout the course of the season, he's a no-brainer all-star to me. And he will be in the front court.
Agreed. Like you said, best player on best team. The way he's been playing lately, even beginning of the season, just when he missed all those, just because he missed all his games, like we should probably have Jimmy Butler MVP conversations. I don't think he'll win it, but he should be in the discussion, especially with how he's been performing as of late. He's no brainer. I felt bad leaving somebody, him off the starter. I usually like to have somebody from the best team, but he missed too many games. But yeah, he's been a monster. He's been Jimmy.
The last guy here that I have as a no-doubter is James Harden. And I thought about putting him into this next bucket of players who's like kind of competing for essentially four spots, right? Five spots counting Kevin Durant. But you look at what he's done over the course of essentially since the calendar turned. I mean, he's basically back to being James Harden. Like, he's averaging 26, 11, and 8. He's shooting 44 from the field, 34 from three, and 85 from the line. He's been a bit less efficient than what he typically is. But, like, I feel like James Harden is – it's hard to get past 26, 11, and 8 over the course of essentially, you know, half the season if you want to push it back. And include the previous games before that. So to me, James Harden probably has to be on the team, even though I have some reservations in a way that I typically don't with James Harden.
I'm glad you said that last part, because I was actually talking with Vinny Goodwill when we were just discussing our ballots, and we both were just kind of over Harden just based on how he started the year and just really half-assing it. Like, it was bad. Like, there's no other ways. Like, it was just really bad. And I didn't want to reward that personally on my ballot. But he has played very well as of late. I think he should be a reserve. But if you were talking about your wild card group, I would probably have him more in the wild card group than a lock reserve, just because I thought he was just so bad for the first month and a half.
Okay. So my next group here, we have essentially five spots remaining, including the Durant injury. I've got, at the guard position, Fred VanVleet, Darius Garland, LaMelo Ball, Bradley Beal. In the forward positions, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Pascal Siakam, Miles Bridges, Domantas Sabonis, Jarrett Allen, Chris Middleton. It's a joke. I mean, it's honestly a joke. Like,
that team might beat the starters.
It's insane. They're so good. Like, they are. This is like an absolute bloodbath. To have to pick five guys of that group is exceptionally difficult.
Super.
The first guy for me.
Yeah.
Was the guy who was a starter for you, Fred VanVleet. Wanted to reward Fred VanVleet. He's been one of the best defensive guards in the NBA this season, in addition to being one of the best lead guard scorers, creators in the NBA. To me, so the conversation that I've seen has centered often around Darius Garland and Fred VanVleet. People look at Darius Garland's passing and try to make a case for him over Fred based off of that. The level to which Fred is a better defender than Darius Garland just kind of supersedes all of this. Like,
yes,
Darius is a slightly better passer than Fred VanVleet is. Fred is one of the like seven or eight best guard defenders in the NBA, and Darius Garland is a below average defender. So I have Fred VanVleet over Darius Garland. I have Fred VanVleet locked into one of my wild card slots. I would imagine that you don't really have a you don't have a argument with that, given that you voted Fred VanVleet as a starter.
Nope. I love it. I think he deserves playing nearly 40 minutes a night, having his most efficient season. Like you said, one of the best defenders and guard, and guard defenders in the league. No beef at all. I was hoping Fred got the starter spot.
Okay. Let's go to the forward spots, because this is where I really struggle. We've got Tatum. We've got Jared Allen, Domantas Sabonis, Pascal Siakam, Jaylen Brown, Miles Bridges, Chris Middleton. It's a big group.
Yeah.
The top guy for me on that list was Jason Tatum. I have him. I know he's not having the most efficient year, but he's been pretty good defensively. The Celtics, he's averaging 26 points a game, 8.5 rebounds, 4 assists. Mm-hmm. I would still like to see him move the ball a little bit better. I would still like to see him be a bit more efficient. Here's the thing. We've complained about how bad the Celtics are throughout the course of the season and how frustrating they've been to watch. Celtics outscore opponents by 9 points per 100 possessions when Jason Tatum is out there. Jason Tatum is the last part of the problem for the Celtics.
Yep.
I have Jason Tatum as my number 2 forward behind Jimmy Butler in this discussion.
I'm with you. I, like you said, that's why I hate doing a pod with you, because you're so damn smart. Like, I feel like I'm just recycling what you're saying. But he's the last problem on the Celtics, and he's been putting up good numbers. Again, I think a lot of people like to say part of the Celtics problem, and they give it maybe a little, they bold it a little bit more than it should be, but it is a problem, is the lack of ball movement between the two stars and creating for others. But I mean, it's not the greatest roster. They're still figuring things out. Tatum's a monster. I just, like you said, with a Harden, you kind of just look at that statistical threshold. It's kind of hard to leave that guy off.
We're going to get into the take experience here coming up with one of my picks. Don't worry. Yes. I really want to get, not just because the game is in Cleveland, but I think you need a representative from the Cavs. In some regard, this team is good for a reason. They are 30-19 so far this year at time of recording. Mm-hmm. They are one of the best defenses in the NBA. None of this is fluky. Like, they've played the 6th hardest schedule in the NBA. They're outscoring their opponents by a good margin. Like, nothing that they've done is fluky. So trying to find the middle ground between all of the disparate pieces with the Cavs is hard, because Darius Garland is what keeps them afloat on offense. He's like the biggest reason that they are able to take advantage of their defense.
Yep.
I think Evan Mobley is the most important defender on their team, because he unlocks their 3-big lineup that takes, so much space up on the court, essentially. Yep. And makes it harder for opposing teams to get into their sets, to score in the paint, to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of those guys are players that I had like real internal discussions on. My pick ended up being Jared Allen.
I knew that was coming. I like that.
I thought that he represented the middle ground between Darius Garland and Evan Mobley really well.
Great point.
And you look at how effective he is offensively as a scorer. He is averaging 16 points, 11 rebounds. He's shooting 69% from the field. I've long been like a skeptic of Jarrett Allen's actual value defensively up until this year. The mm-hmm. Cavs have unlocked his ability to protect the rim. They've unlocked his length at the basket. He has been phenomenal around the basket this season. The question between Jarrett Allen and Domantas Sabonis will come up, right? Because Domantas Sabonis is averaging, I think, 19 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. So the counting stats favor Domantas Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch Indiana, it feels like to me there's like this weird push-pull between Rick Carlisle, like, running what he wants to eventually implement, and like trying to utilize some of the stuff that has made Domantas Sabonis so good over the years, like running triple handoffs away from the basket and, you know, doing some like mid-posty stuff. Like it feels like they haven't totally unlocked him yet.
No.
And while the numbers are very good, I don't feel like his impact is quite as felt for me for some reason this year. When I watch the Pacers, look, they're not very good either. Like right. Part of that could be that reason, right? They're 17-32 at time of recording this podcast. So like yep. Part of me doesn't want to reward a team that's, you know, 17-32. And I know that like the Pacers, a lot of it's just been close games, but like, it's also when I watch them, like it just doesn't feel like Sabonis is having quite as good of a year as he has the last couple of years.
I agree. And I think what you said, the caveat of the impact, and like, yes, the numbers are really good. But like, you have to watch the Pacers to kind of understand. It's like, I struggle to put it into words. Like, if anybody hasn't watched the Pacers and are like wondering, looking at someone like, how is Sabonis not an all-star? Like, if you watch, there's not the fear of God. He doesn't put the fear of God in anybody. He puts up good numbers, but I don't think an opposing big man is going in there afraid to guard Sabonis. I don't think they're afraid to take it to Sabonis on the other end. They're working out kinks. That roster is, we've talked about it for, I mean, it feels like years now. Like, the roster is just weird. Carlisle himself is trying to figure out the best way to use Sabonis. Seems like naturally he wants him to step out and shoot some more threes. Sabonis is kind of reluctant to do it. It's a mess, and this is not to discredit Sabonis' development and where he is as a player. Like, I still classify him as an all-star level player, but his impact just has not been the same this year. I don't know. I think of all-star, I think of, yeah. Does this person put the fear into somebody also? Like, and I just, Sabonis doesn't just seem like a fearful guy this year.
Yeah, and look, like, we're comparing him to Jared Allen. I don't know that Jared Allen puts the fear in people, but I think he probably does defensively to some extent.
Yeah,
whenever
drive
onto the interior. The Pacers are about the same offensively right now, whether Domantas Sabonis is off the court or whether he's on the court. They're better defensively when he's on the court right now because they just hemorrhage offensive rebounds whenever he's off the court. Like, it's staggering how bad their rebounding is outside of Domantas Sabonis. And to some extent, I think that, like, it's worth attributing that value to him.
Fair.
I just couldn't quite get there with Sabonis. I think that the production from Jarrett Allen and his ability to create space for Darius Garland by being such an impactful roller to the rim, it is close enough to Sabonis' value offensively, even though it does not exceed Sabonis' value offensively, to where, to me, Jared Allen, who has been, I wouldn't quite have him as an all-defense big man this year, but he's in the conversation.
It's damn close, yeah.
As an all-defense, you know, forward this year, all-defense center, whatever he's going to be classified as. I think that exceeds Domantas' value, and that's why I have Jared Allen as an all-star. And plus, it is nice to have someone from Cleveland, given that the game is going to be in Cleveland.
Yes. I like the way that you put that. He's the proper middle ground. It's like, I would, obviously, he's not the most flashy player and he's not a creator with the ball, but I would call Jared Allen a BB on both sides of the B plus on both sides of the floor. And then I would call, like, Garland B plus C minus, and then Mobley A minus on defense, and then maybe just like a B minus C plus on offense right now. Like, I think that's just a good middle ground. Jarrett does everything you've asked of him at a high level, and I think that's important. The one guy I was really hoping, and this is obviously I'm biased with this one in the way he started the year, but he obviously cooled off but has had some moments since then, is Miles Bridges. I thought that would be cool for him to kind of work his way in there. I think he's probably how many total reserves are there?
So
on the actual team,
7, and then we're adding a spot because of Kevin Durant. So
yeah,
8 we're going 8 right now. We've locked in James Harden, Zach LaVine, Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, Fred VanVleet, and Jared Allen. So that's 6. So we have 2 spots left. We've got 2 spots for Drew Holiday, Darius Garland, LaMelo Ball, Bradley Beal, Miles Bridges, Domantas Sabonis, Chris Middleton, Pascal Siakam, and Jaylen Brown. So, okay. When I watch the Hornets, I think LaMelo is the more impressive player.
Yes.
I know that Miles' numbers are a little bit better in terms of the counting numbers. When I watch LaMelo, LaMelo's the guy.
Like, yeah, he unlocks all that.
So to me, LaMelo above Bridges. The next question for me is Darius Garland, Drew Holiday, Bradley Beal, LaMelo. I'm good with another guard there.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that I have in the spot right now, and I'm willing to be talked out of it, but the guy I have right now is Drew Holiday.
That's fine with me. I was hoping you didn't say Bradley Beal. Like, Bradley to me is like, I don't even want to have him in part of the discussion with the group you named.
So, like, I think that we're kind of
being harsh.
I understand that. But, yeah, I think there's, like, a little bit of harshness on Beal this year. You look at what the passing is. Like, he's been awesome as a distributor this year compared to last year. Like, he's been so, so good getting them, you know, playing next to Spencer Dinwiddie often and getting them in and out. Like, I get that the defense is bad, but and he's still averaging 24 a night. He's making a more concerted effort to play team basketball this year. The Wizards were really good to start the year. Like, and I know that Bradley Beal did not start the year awesomely, but, like, I don't know. I couldn't get Beal.
I still love
like,
him, yeah.
Yeah. I don't have Bradley Beal as an all-star.
I'm but with you.
You start comparing the numbers next to Darius Garland, and they're not far off. Like, right. They're actually, you know, there's a pretty real case that you should pick Beal over Darius Garland.
Right.
So that's kind of why I think you have to throw him in. I would have LaMelo over both of those guys. I ultimately went with Drew Holiday over LaMelo because Drew Holiday is just such a ridiculous defender. He is averaging 18 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, turning the ball over at a very low level. And look, like, you just watch Milwaukee, like, so much of their identity is obviously Giannis, but, like, Drew Holiday has slid right into that so, so well. I personally would have him as Milwaukee's second All-Star over Chris Middleton. I think that Drew's been a little bit better offensively this year. Like, Chris isn't having his most efficient season shooting from the mid-range and, you know, obviously isn't nearly as impactful defensively as Drew Holiday. So when I watch Milwaukee, I think that Drew is their second best player right now. And then, like, the defense again versus LaMelo is just, like, a big difference for me. I went Drew Holiday in this other spot here in my second wild card.
I like that. You actually talked me into it as you were going because I would have sounded – I definitely think in my mind and how I tend to vote, I like to – as I mentioned with my FVV pick, I really like to – if a guy has good enough offensive production, if he's a borderline elite defender, I like to reward that guy just because that's basketball. Like, you have to pay both sides of the floor. I know it's not glamorous, but – there are guys who do it and do it at a great and high level. So with that said, that would contradict my kind of FVV over Trey if I said Drew over – if I said LaMelo over Drew. But there's part of me that wanted somebody from Charlotte to be represented because, of course, I think some of us thought, like, they could be okay, but I don't know if we expected – where are they right now? Fifth, sixth in the East? Just 2 games back from Milwaukee. So, like, I tend to want to have them have a mascot at the All-Star game. So that's where I struggle a little bit with not having LaMelo. But you're correct. I mean, we don't need to say anything about Drew. Like, we know what he is. The turnovers this year, like you said, I think that's a great caveat, like, especially with how much he's handling the ball and how much he's doing on the defensive end. Like, the dude just is a machine. So I agree. I like Drew. And this is our last spot, our joint last spot, right? There's not one more.
I have a case that I want to make.
Go ahead, do it.
Pascal Siakam.
He's picked it up lately.
I think that Pascal Siakam has been one of the 20 best players, maybe 15 best players in the NBA, over the course of his last, 20 games. Like, since Toronto has went on this run where I think they've won like 15 of their last 25 or so, they've pulled it up to where they've been awesome. And they're back a little bit over. I think they're either 500 or one game over 500. They're sitting in seventh right now in the Eastern Conference. Siakam's the guy. He's averaging over that time 23 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. He's playing plus defense. Like, he's kind of like the game between him and Fred VanVleet has been unbelievable. I know that we have two Raptors on this team, or at least that I would be voting for two Raptors, and that is not necessarily ideal for everyone.
It's an individual honor. You're right. I mean, you're right.
So the other option is Jaylen Brown, who's averaging 24, 7, and 3, shooting 45 from the field, 36 from 3, 78 from the line. Again, playing plus defense, especially on the ball.
How many games has he missed?
So he's missed about 15. Yeah. And Siakam has certainly missed some time as well. And at the beginning of the year, Siakam was not incredible. Like, Jaylen Brown's played 33 games. Or Jaylen Brown's played 35. Pascal Siakam's played 33. Look, it's tossing.
It's tough, man.
It's a toss-up between these two. I personally go Siakam because the level that Siakam, when he has played at his best,
nobody has reached that of that group we're talking about.
Over these last 25 games, I don't think anyone among this group has quite been as consistently great as Siakam has been.
Agreed.
Jaylen Brown, I think there's a real case for. I would not. If someone wants to pick Jaylen Brown, I would get it. If someone wants to pick LaMelo Ball, I would get it. I guess if someone wants to pick Sabonis, like Pascal Siakam versus Sabonis, Siakam's numbers are just better. He's averaging more assists even than Sabonis, which is kind of part of Sabonis's value, right? And obviously Siakam is playing better defense than Sabonis. Between the two, I don't really think there's a case for Sabonis over Siakam. Miles Bridges is just kind of fallen off in terms of shooting. If someone wants to pick Chris Middleton, I would get that. I wouldn't personally, but I would get that. I would get Jaylen Brown. I'd get LaMelo Ball. I can't quite get there on Darius Garland because of the defense. I mean, where are you at on this?
And again, I might just be a hypocrite right now. I don't care. I do think Charlotte should be rewarded.
Okay.
And so I'm going to go LaMelo.
Okay.
I agree with you. Of the group we're mentioning, nobody's consistent greatness has reached that of Pascal's. I agree with you that Brown, when healthy, we talk about the two-way player this whole podcast, as excellent of a two-way player as it gets. Garland, the defense is just too bad, but then I'm sitting here picking LaMelo, who I think LaMelo at least has some instinctual stuff that makes it okay. But I guess, and Drew, I mean, who doesn't love Drew? But as much as this is an individual honor, I still tend to just feel bad if a team that is overachieving in the eyes of some, isn't represented. So I'm going to go LaMelo. It's kind of the same reason I didn't have Trey starting, because of how, even though they've won a bunch in a row or they've won a bunch of their last seven or something like that, they're just underperformed. So I'm contradicting myself and not contradicting myself. I'm just going to shut up and pick LaMelo.
Yeah, LaMelo's averaging 19 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. He's shooting 42 from the field, 36 from 3, 89 from the line. I think there's a real case for LaMelo. I don't really have a problem with the pick. He's been great recently as well. I think it's totally reasonable pick. Rationable. Let's go with that. No, I think it's fine. Okay.
So are you going Pascal?
Going Pascal. Going LaMelo. I think that's... Yep. Yeah, I think that's kind of wrong on this.
We're sorry, okay, Drew.
No. We got Drew Holiday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so our final Eastern Conference All-Stars here. We got Trae Young, DeMar DeRozan, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Kevin Durant. We've got James Harden and Zach LaVine in the backcourt. We've got Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, and Jarrett Allen in the frontcourt. We've got Fred VanVleet and Drew Holiday as our wild cards. And then finally, we have Pascal Siakam replacing Kevin Durant in the lineup. Okay.
Love it.
The West. We've got Ja Morant, Stephen Curry, Andrew Wiggins, Nikola Jokic, LeBron James. The guards, I think, are kind of easy. I went the Phoenix backcourt. I went Devin Booker and Chris Paul.
Same. Okay. I mean, I felt bad that one of them, I didn't have one of them as a starter, but Ja's just been, I mean, we don't got to say it. We know how crazy Ja's been, but yeah, I got both of those guys.
And by the way, the real fuck up here with the NBA, just make it like, you know, two front court, two back court, and like a wild card or something.
Yes.
Like that way you can just get Devin Booker into the starting lineup. Like that's the easiest way. Or Luka Doncic if you want. Like whoever your pick is here, I'd personally pick Devin Booker over Luka Doncic. But like I just do something like that. Like maybe that's the adjustment if you want to do one. Okay.
I like that idea.
In the front court, Luka Doncic, Draymond Green, Rudy Gobert were my three.
Same here. No complaints. I voted for Rudy as a starter. Draymond, my fellow Spartan dog, is, I mean, defensively, like, again, we don't need to talk about how good Draymond is defensively for the best defensive team in the NBA. And Luka's been, I mean, slow start, but that Dallas team is really surging. I think they're one of the better defensive teams, too, over the last couple weeks, maybe month or something like that. But, I mean, Luka's just been Luka, especially as of late. He's played himself into shape, as he tends to do, and he looks just a lot better, and it's a no-brainer for me.
He's averaging 25-9-9. Like, it's...
He's ridiculous, dude.
It's hard to get past that. Like, it's the same with James Harden in the East, right? Like,
yeah,
it's hard to get past 26-10-8. Like, you can't... Like, you can complain about guys playing themselves into shape, but then when they play themselves into shape, they're like fucking God mode. So, I mean,
there are a few better once these guys want to start giving a shit. There are a few better.
Nah, it's a tough one. Okay. Yeah. And then Rudy, yeah, fine. Like, I'm good with Rudy. Rudy's been one of the best defensive players in the NBA this year. I had him second on my all defense ballot that I did with Fred Katz a little while ago. You know, 16 points, 15 rebounds, 70% from the field. It's, you know, he's one of the best centers in the league.
Yep. And I got to witness kind of firsthand how really bad, I mean, it's not a secret, how bad the Jazz defense can be when he's not on the floor. Like, you were tweeting about that game. Cade just had his way, just obliterated. Their perimeter defense was atrocious. So, Rudy, as people know, as much as they dislike him, and that's why he's not a starter for whatever reason, his impact is, it's, you can't even deny it. You can't, he's an NBA all-star and should be, until we see a blip in his defense, which I don't think we're anywhere near seeing.
By the way, Cade Cunningham, over his last 23 games, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal. Has got the turnover number under control. He's down to 3.5. And he's shooting 45, 41, 83. Cade Cunningham,
I think he's
good at basketball.
Yes. And I think he's shooting, like, I got to double check, but it's like mid-50s on pull-up threes, like over the last, like, 3 weeks or just something absurd.
You give him that, like, right-to-left step-back sidestep three, it's, like, automatic for him.
Yes.
He's
such a rhythm player. Yeah, he's fun to – I've enjoyed covering him.
Yeah.
Okay. Great kid, too.
Oh, just the nicest, like, but most, like, serious and, like, emotionally intelligent, like, leader, like, but also,
raised
like,
well.
A good person. Yeah. No, all of it across the board. Yep. Okay. My two wild cards for the West. This came down to three spots for me. I considered guys like, or three for two spots. I considered guys like DeAndre Ayton and Jaren Jackson. I considered guys like Kristaps. I considered Paul George, who has missed a lot of time this year.
Yeah.
The pool of players to consider this year is just much lower. It's just very, very low in terms of like, who do you need to even think about? Like, I guess that we could have thrown Brandon Ingram in here, but like, they're not awesome. Like, they're not very good. And he hasn't been so overridingly good to where I would take him. Yeah. If we're going with a player from a not very good team in the West, and there are more like disaster teams in the West than there are in the East, one of these three for two spots guys that I have is DeJounte Murray.
I was hoping that's who you're going to say. I think we should lock that one in.
You want him in?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's, okay. If you're down.
I had him my last guy out.
I'm not mad at you. I get it.
So the other guy worth considering here that I didn't really, like I sort of kind of thought about, but not really, was Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. Anthony Edwards is averaging 23 points a game, 45% from field, 37% from three, 80 from the line, five rebounds per game, 3.5 assists, 3 turnovers. I think that you can make a reasonable case for Anthony Edwards. I think that if you're picking a wild card off of the Timberwolves, you take Karl Anthony Towns.
Yep.
So Towns was one of my wild cards.
I was, when you first named off the list, you hadn't said him, so I was like, I hope he says him because I was going to say him. So I agree. I think Cat's had a good year. I mean, we know how good Cat is. I like that pick.
Yeah, great passing year for Cat. Obviously, just as efficient as he's ever been. He's shooting 51% from the field. He's shooting 41% from three, 81 from the line, 24-10. Like he's been awesome. Chris Finch has really done a great job of kind of unlocking what makes him so good. To me, like Karl Towns, I'm in on the All-Star. The other guy I have is Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is averaging 25 points a game and 5 assists. And I know that he is not the most efficient guy in the world, but he is, especially this year, as Mike Conley has just been a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell has been tasked with creating a lot more out of ball screens, and he's done so very efficiently. He is one of the most efficient creators out of ball screens in the NBA this year. I know the defense gives some people some consternation. I get it. The case for Donovan Mitchell is that over him versus DeJounte Murray, I think teams are just more worried about Donovan Mitchell than they are DeJounte Murray. Like, DeJounte does so much of his damage in transition that he's gotten a lot better when the game slows down. And again, he would be my 13th guy. So if someone gets hurt here, knock on wood, hopefully no one does, DeJounte would be my guy that I would add in. And frankly, like, DeJounte probably had a spot taken by Andrew Wiggins in the starting lineup. And yeah. I feel like a little bit bad about that for DeJounte.
Yeah.
But I think that he is just not as effective or impactful as Donovan Mitchell is in the half court, and that makes him just a bit less of a valuable guy. Whenever you're trying to come up with a team like this.
I think that is fair. I think some of – and it's I don't know what it is with Utah. I think a lot of it is fatigue as to why – like even me, like I got sucked up into it. Like – Donovan is averaging, honestly, he's at that threshold.
Like, I think that it's fatigue from them, to be honest.
Well, that too.
Like, think the team is a little bit fatigued, don't you?
Yep. Yeah, they need to shake up too. That'd also be a great Jeremy Grant landing spot if they had the stuff to do it. But, I think there's just a little, there is fatigue there. And with Donovan, and I feel bad that, like, I voted for Rudy as a starter, and then I'm, like, saying, well, does Utah deserve to? I like the newness of DeJounte Murray, and I was like, when it comes to reserves, that's, like, when the fan mode kicks in, because I, like, really enjoy watching DeJounte. I love watching Donovan, too. Like, 25 and the stat lines you have are at that threshold we were talking about. The Jazz are still a good basketball team. So I don't think there's any, like... Like you said, he's got to do more, even more. The they've had a weird, that roster is weird. And this season has been weird for them. Like, I don't really know. I think maybe it is just like they need like some freshness and that would solve it. Like, just even like some type of, whether it's Bogdanovich or somebody, a deal probably should be done. But it made me like feel bad that I wasn't like beating the drum for Mitchell. Like, he's had a really good year. He has to do more. The Utah Jazz are still a good team. But I was like, DeJounte Murray's been fun and she's new and I voted for Rudy. So I felt like I did my due diligence, but you're right. Like, I wouldn't, no way at all. I would argue with that. And Utah's still like a top six offense. And he's the one that stirs the drink.
Yeah, I guess that, like, with DeJounte, like, I love watching him play. I think he's a really great defender as well. Like, I think all of that really lines up. It's just, when it's, I watch the level two of guys, basketball. Like, it is. It really is. Like, it's the difference between a guy that, like, when the game slows down and it changes, like, I feel a lot more comfortable with Donovan Mitchell with the ball in his hands than I do DeJounte Murray. And that's not a slight on DeJounte.
No.
He's developing. He's getting better. Like, it's his leap this season, I think, puts him in the conversation for most improved player in the NBA. Yep. But it's this Utah team, like, we talk shit about it, and it's, they're still 30 and 19. Like, they still have the third best net rating in the NBA. They beat teams by an average of 7 points for 100 possessions, right? Like, they're a buzzsaw. It's just, the problem is that I agree with you. They need an infusion of, like, new life to just, like, kind of change the, like, shit around the team, it feels like, right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, it's hard to be around the same group of guys, I feel like, for as many years now as Utah has had those guys around and had, like, the same level of regular season success and then playoff failure. Like, I'm sure that gets frustrating, creates its own set of issues. Like,
it's different last night, if there was a breakthrough, right? Like, we saw when Portland snuck and got to the Western Conference Final. Like, things have gone south since then, but, like, there was a little rejuvenation the year after. Like, that was a group that had been together for a while. I agree. Like, there's some staleness there.
Yeah, and I should mention, too, like, another guy that I looked at was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because I love Shai, right?
Yeah.
Just the efficiency numbers aren't good enough at the end of the day. Like, he's just not having a good enough scoring season to make up for some of the defensive issues that he also has, just in terms of being skinny. And look, they're 14 and 33. Like, I don't think we need to reward them for a bad season. So, like, you know, I didn't mention Shai earlier, but I want to make sure that, like, people know that, you know, he's in the conversation, certainly. You know, I don't think I could quite get Halliburton in the conversation. I don't think I could quite get, like, any of these Portland guys in the conversation. You know, even though, like, look, Damian Lillard's played 29 games and averaged 24 and 7, right? But you can't get him in there. He's not the same guy right now with that ab injury. No. All right. The West was a little bit easier.
I was going to say, I feel the same about Paul George, too. It's not his fault. It's just the amount of games missed.
Yeah, like, Paul George would have been, like, the easy pick for me. It's just that, you know, he's played half the season so far. And when he played, like, he wasn't the most efficient guy. And part of that was because of the amount of, like, shit that was on his plate. He has to create so much for that Clippers team without Kawhi Leonard. But, you know, below average in terms of efficiency this year. Turnover numbers are actually up for him this year. You know, whenever you play half the games, you basically have to be perfect, I think. And while Paul George has been phenomenal, he hasn't been perfect.
Nope, agreed. West was much easier.
Yeah, West was much easier. James, anything else going on? Like, what do we need to talk about here? Anything else?
Oh, man, I don't think so. We've covered, I'm trying to think, anything crazy going on? No, All-Stars, people yelling about Wiggins. We talked deadline. I think that's it.
I think we did.
Can I stake a draft take right now?
The floor is yours.
Benedict will be the best pro.
Oh.
When the dust settles.
Pitch. Let's go. I want to hear the pitch. I'm all in. Let's do it.
I'm all in. I don't know why I'm all in, but I just have fun watching the kid play.
I do too. What worries me a little bit is like he doesn't have that inherent creativity off the bounce. A lot of it's like straight line, yeah. Jump stop into floaters, or like just pulling up from three, right? He's improved as a passer this year. Doesn't quite have like the passing level yet, but
I've seen some stuff I've liked. Yeah, when it comes to his passing, like I've seen some stuff I've liked, but I agree it's not all the way there. Yeah, he's very direct with his game.
Yeah,
not like you said, not a lot of wiggle.
Almost in a good way though, in terms of being direct with his game. Yeah,
agreed. That's ridiculous. I'm gonna eat my words. It's like when I said Marshawn Brooks is the next Kobe. Everybody's wrong every now and then. Even though I stand by, and somebody tweeted this at me. I had like redug up the Marshawn Brooks take from when I was in college or high school or something. And somebody's like, well, Marshawn Brooks is Kobe in China. So you're like, you weren't totally wrong. He's averaging like 40 over there.
Right. Like, here's the thing. For me and you, like, because what, James, you're what, like 27, something like that?
I wish. I'll be 30 in March.
Yeah, so I turned 32 in April, right?
Okay.
People don't understand that, like, people like you and I, we grew up like on Twitter. So yes. Like we have like fucking like I've cleaned out my Twitter history because I don't like dealing with like the fucking bullshit that people will like spout back troll. At you. And just like troll. Like it's just not good for my mental health, to be honest. Right. But what ends up happening is that we have these takes from when we're in college. When we were really dumb, yeah, and 100%. People like think that like it stands for anything, and right. You know it's tough. It's real.
I was 18, downing Heinekens three times a day in my dorm room when I tweeted Marshawn Brooks is the next Kobe.
Oh my god!
But everybody loved Marshawn Brooks. I don't know what happened.
I mean, my favorite Marshawn Brooks story is like the wrong Brooks getting traded.
I'll never forget that because that was during summer league. No, was that in season?
I think it was in season.
I feel like reason. We were like all the yeah, maybe you're right. Yes, I will always remember that. That was insane. It was hilarious. Miscommunication. Like were they just on the phone? Yeah, we'll take Brooks too. Well, we have two. Like, give him the worst one. They didn't specify.
How do you fuck that up?
Oh my gosh! I need a story on it, like an oral history of that day.
I kind of do too. Maybe that's a story to write at some point. Okay, this has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember rate, review, subscribe. James, tell the people what you've got going on in your life. What do you have on the website? I know you just wrote a really cool story on Isaiah Stewart. I want you to be able to direct people to it.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at JL Edwards III. If you're a Pistons fan or not, I'm at on the Pistons tab at The Athletic. Yeah, I just wrote story about Isaiah Stewart. Everybody knows about the motor, but like he's a really studious guy as well. What else have I done? Just a bunch of random stuff. If you want to read about a fan who went and saw the Pistons play at every road arena, you can do that. If you want to read about trade stuff, you can do that. If you're, I don't know, if you just are bored, just go ahead, click on the Pistons tab, follow on Twitter. Appreciate you for having me, Sam.
Of course, James. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Like I said, we are. I've got a big board up. I tag teamed with a bunch of our college writers to talk about the Chris Mack thing at Louisville, which was a mess, as Matt Penny and I talked about last time. What do I have coming up? I'm starting to work on rookie rankings. I have like a first pass of rankings. I'm starting to work on some of that. And then I should have a trade story with some close friends of this program coming up next week. But until then, and until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.